Is there a spiritual technique or methods to help when we are overtaken by emotion? It's a little bit like the first question.
Yeah. The question was, are there spiritual techniques to use when you're overcome by emotion? Well, I'll tell you, as your practice gets more and more powerful, what happens is you see the stuff as it starts before it gets completely zonkers, before it gets so overloaded and so invested with adrenaline and all of that. You don't let it get to that, you don't let it get so intense. By the time it gets out of control and so immense, then you just can do, you just wait. You wait. The best thing to do at that point is to sit quietly. Is to let it pass. When I'm really emotionally upset. Now, see, what happens is when an emotional upset starts, it may start out of a thought process, but then it starts to involve all of the body, the adrenaline and all kinds of chemical things. Then often one of the ways out of it is to work with the body. For example, running or movement, taking a walk, doing things which start to release the energy, the kind of chemical buildup that is, because you get that nervous energy when you're emotionally upset, and start a walk with it. Then there is meditation of quieting down and allowing yourself to see how lost you've gotten. I mean, on the deeper devotional path, there is the offering of the emotion to God, saying, here, you take it. I offer it to you. There is appreciating your humanity. Yeah, here I am. I'm human. I just lost it again. Ah, so. There's the ah, so. Right, okay. Once more. Once more lightly. Boy, am I hung up. These are all spiritual techniques. See, it's the one level of the up-leveling. It's the ability to see it without denying it. Not saying I'm not really upset. I am upset far out. Here we are again. It's like talking with God and saying, oh, look at how deliciously human I am. Not to milk it, not to keep feeding it, but not to push it away. That's the quickest way through. To acknowledge it, allow it, then use body energy to keep working out the chemical stuff that's built up and the tension in the body that's been built up, and then get on with it and just keep letting go, letting go, letting go. Okay? Sometimes music does it. Sometimes there are a lot of techniques that do. And then you see that it's your expectations of your own mind that are creating your hell. I expected you to be. When you get frustrated because something isn't the way you thought, examine the way you thought, not just the thing that frustrates you. And you will see that a lot of your suffering is created by your models about how the universe ought to be. And your inability to allow it to be. If I meet somebody that is a liar and a cheat, they are like an elm tree. They are essence of liar and cheat. If I have a model, people shouldn't lie and cheat, then I immediately am in opposition to that person. They are essence liar and cheat. I don't have to play games with them. I may say in the future, you and I can't play together because you're a liar and a cheat and I can't play with you. But I at least appreciate and allow them their liarness and cheatness. That's their problem, not mine. My problem was my expectations. If you have a model that everybody is good and then somebody isn't, and then you end up hating the world and all upset about the world because it isn't the way you expected it to be. It's like you come here and you expect there's a beautiful day, so you expect the next day is going to be beautiful. Then it rains and you're disappointed. Well, isn't it funny that when it rains, you should be disappointed? I mean, that's to take nature and allow nature to... when it's in its natural state to make you miserable. It says something about you. It's like decaying and dying. If you're upset about decaying and dying, you got a problem. You really do. Okay, let's go on. We can't take questions because we're getting too far behind. Other than, yeah.
How do we heal our emotional bodies, and how do you see the role of psychotherapy in all this?
How do we heal our emotional body and the role of psychotherapy? As you quiet your mind, you begin to see the different components of your being and which ones are out of harmony in the universe. You can see, for example, that your body energies are out of balance and that you have to work on your body. You have to get to move the energies in a different way or strengthen your muscles or do something, because you can feel that it's draining energy, it's pulling upon you. Or in the psychodynamic sense, you can begin to see that there are patterns of the way in which you're seeing the universe that are blocking energy, be a way of saying that. At that point, you may go to somebody who is in the business of mirroring on that plane of reality, somebody who knows how to work with that plane of reality. Somebody with whom, when you present your psychodynamics, they're like a fair witness. They can see the way in which you are caught, and they allow you to see the way you're caught in a way you can't see it. In other words, there are times when your history, emotional history, leaves you weird, if you will, or out of balance, and such that you can't see it clearly. You can't get behind it well enough to clear see it. And so you'd go to somebody who is in the business of seeing that clearly. Now, when you go to a psychotherapist, they're not the Buddha, and they're not, you know, they're not the goddess Tara, and they're not the enlightened being. They're just a therapist. They're a fellow human being. And so don't expect them to liberate you. All they are, I don't mean this in a pejorative sense. When you have a dent in your fender of your automobile, you go to a fender repair person. When you have a personality imbalance, you go to a personality person. You don't expect the body and fender repair person to liberate you. You expect them to fix your automobile. And in the same way, you expect the psychotherapist. What we have done is we've elevated psychotherapists into the medicine people of the society, and they're not really the medicine. Psychotherapists aren't happier than anybody else, necessarily, the way I can see it. I mean, I've studied a lot of them, and they sure aren't. Because their work isn't necessarily liberating them from suffering. All it is doing is reorganizing their dynamics of human interaction to allow them to cope and adjust better. But that doesn't liberate. And that isn't the ultimate happiness. That's the problem. So you can go to a therapist for that particular purpose without expecting and then being disappointed because they don't liberate you. Because only a therapist that's working on themselves from a spiritual point of view would be somebody that can be a therapist without getting lost in the role of being a therapist. Most therapists need to be identified as a therapist in order for their own ego to be adequate. And when their ego is involved, like even a therapist that needs you to get better for them to feel their self-worth. It's like asking a therapist, what is it you feel when a patient comes into your office or a client? What is your contract with them? Is your contract with them to heal them, or is your contract merely to be an environment where they can heal themselves if they wish to? And can you justify taking money from somebody if you're just an environment, or is there a subtle thing in the contract, you pay me, I'll make you better? And if that's the one, it's a very sick one. It's a problem. It is a definite problem. Because your desire to make that person better awakens resistance in that person, and you're both dealing with transference of all kinds. That's very complex stuff. So what I suggest is that, like, I have very often done, and many of my friends who are very deep in spiritual practice have gone into practice more and more deeply, and they've gotten to the point where they become aware of the way their psychodynamics are stuck and that their spiritual practices don't get at that easily. And then they go to a therapist, work with a therapist for a while, clean up that, open that, because it's ripe to open. It's like cracking a nut when it's just ripe. Then they go back into spiritual practice. Is that dealing with the question?
Could you just say a bit more about healing the
healing
emotional?
The emotional body. Just very simply, to heal the emotional body, there are two strategies. One is to work on the imbalances in the emotional body directly. That would be a therapeutic technique. The other would be to obliquely just go on the spiritual direction. And as that consciousness gets more, as the awareness gets stronger, and as that other plane of reality gets stronger, these others start to change their significance. They start to lose their power. A lot of the problem with healing the emotional body is there is so much investment in it that it's very hard to change it, because it is so, the whole identity of the individual is so connected with that emotional imbalance. Do you hear what I'm saying? And so one of the ways to do it is to cultivate another part of your being, which gets stronger and stronger, like the witness, for example. And then as the witness gets stronger, these become a little less relevant to your own existence, and then they are easily changeable, while they're not so changeable when you say, I have a problem, and you're defining yourself by your problem, and you go to a therapist to heal the problem. It's like saying, change me. While when you cultivate the witness, you're saying, would you change my personality, not change me? Do you see the difference? So there is a healing of the body, which at times you can take on directly, and at times you take on indirectly. Very often, when somebody has a neurotic pattern, my best statement is, go meditate some more. And in the course of it, that pattern will change. At other times, I see that they really need somebody to help them mirror at that. So I think you've got to listen for those two things. Questions?
I have been pondering lately my darker sides, what I feel like my darker sides. And I think I have been putting all that, more or less, perhaps unconsciously, into the background. Have been perhaps playing sort of hide and seek with myself, so my question is, how can I attain the stance where I know how to stop that hide and seek process and really venture on confronting myself and seeing all those darker sides. I have been, I have had a period where I have noticed that I'm changing, and people respond to that, and I'm happy, and that feeds my ego very strongly. So that makes the temptation to put all the rest into the background so much the stronger. But now, there I am. How shall I get to this... how shall I become conscious, more conscious of this seek and hide playing with myself? And so see how I can really confront these things head on, face to face, and be able to forgive myself for them, take them lightly, And to me it sounds very, very, very paradoxical to love, simply to see those things and really love them, or at least accept them completely.
There are words in the way in which you presented that question, which was very beautifully presented. There are ways that you presented it that in which red flags went up in my consciousness. Words like confront and words like forgive. What I have found is that as I have found and cultivated a part of my being that is behind the good and the evil, behind the dark and the light, behind personality, behind even thought, that as I've cultivated that, which has a quality of spaciousness, of presence, of softness, of just isness, and as I have been less ego involved in dark and light, the dark and the light come up and they make themselves more available to me because I am invested less in them. That the intensity of the investment in an image of oneself that leads one to push away things that are not harmonious with the way which one wants, in which one would like to see oneself. What I have noticed is that as I, instead of dealing with them directly, as I've gone in a very oblique fashion to merely cultivate these other parts of my being, that I have divested these, the incredible lock-in of emotionality to these dark identities and the light identities, and then they just start to swirl in front of me and just seem like nature and its processes. Rather, and in the same way as I needn't forgive nature for a rainstorm, because it is part of the way of things, so I don't end up forgiving nature, which is my own dark and lights and dramas and unfolding of stuff. I just come to allow it or acknowledge it, and it loses its power. I'm really interested in how you divest something of the power as opposed to deal with it. Because dealing with it invests that plane of reality with a solidity. And the capacity to cultivate another plane of consciousness, it's the way in which the woman who was dealing with bereavement just now said, when I go into this other place, it's all perfectly clear and light. And all that stuff you're stuck in seems kind of irrelevant. And then you come back into it and it's all heavy and you seem like you're climbing a mountain. And the art, as I understand it, is to cultivate these other planes of consciousness. And then as you do it, you just, the stuff keeps coming up and you keep running it through. You no longer have to push it away because it falls into perspective. It's as if you've just shifted your focus. Like when I am with somebody and I am caught in our relationship, then what you did to me and what I did to you, and you're not really feeling friendly and I'm concerned, and we're caught in these structures. When we come up for air and we look at each other, we look and we see all this is the stuff of life between us. And at that moment, all that stuff just seems so malleable and so workable and so easily let goable and so changeable, because our ego isn't invested in that plane of reality where that's all real. It's like Thaddeus Golis, who wrote a book called The Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment, One of his lines was, what am I doing in this place where this is real? How did I get stuck here? What am I doing here? How bizarre. And I think that, so for example, when I feel like I'm in my personality structures, in the darks and the lights and all, even though I'm in a culture that treats that with such reverence, as if it's all so solidly real, I'm much more inclined to chant the Hanuman Chalisa and just sing the Hanuman and just go off in another angle, follow my breath or sing or talk to Maharaji and just I love you or think about Hanuman or the Ramayana or do my devotional practices or my service and just, and people say, well, you're pushing it away. That sometimes when you're in it and you try to work it out, you just keep investing it. And it's a bottomless well of stuff. Because as long as you stay in the world of good and evil, it keeps feeding upon itself. And the only way I understand is to come to the place that exists behind dark and a light, in which then, as your investment is less, the stuff keeps coming up, and it just seems to be appreciated, understood why it is the way it is, and it starts to lose its power. And that, I think, is the only strategy I can suggest. Right? Because I think the words like confront and forgive are all at that plane where that's real. Okay. Question.
I'd like to know about forgiveness as a bridge between the separate self and the awakened soul.
It's a nice way of putting the question. It's a, it is a step on a stepladder that goes from dualism into non-dualism. Because as you forgive or allow or acknowledge or say, of course you're human or we all do that or something, you open your heart again, which embraces the person or the situation back into you, which allows the place. See, every time you close off something with judgment, it's as if you take a bit of energy and you lock it and make it unavailable to you. Till pretty soon you're exhausted. You don't have any energy because you're so busy. It's like I often visualize it as having little doors inside your head. And you get an unforgiving. You're holding a grudge. And so that every time you think of that person, your heart closes down. It's as if you've got a little room with a guard at it that doesn't allow you to flow freely. And they're all the no's of life. The no, no, no. It's just no, 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 no. It's an emotional no against the world, against the universe, against the way the universe is, as opposed to yes. Now, we've been talking about how to say no without closing your heart, but the no I'm talking about is the heart closing no. It's the judging, a grudge, non-forgiving, no. And it costs more than it's worth. Even though you're right, righteousness is ultimately starves you to death. Righteousness is not liberation. It's known as the golden chain. You're wonderful, and you're absolutely right. But you're dead. I mean, you're dead to the living spirit. And finally, you want to be free more than you want to be right. And you have to forgive somebody, not because they deserve forgiveness within your other model, in a righteous sense. After Maharaji in that story the other day said to me, Ramdas, I told you to love everyone and tell the truth. And I looked at those people who I had built up all this righteous indignation and hatred towards, sitting across the courtyard at the temple. And I went over there, and I was in this ecstatic state from being with Maharaji, and also my ego was in incredible pain. And I took apples, and I cut them into little pieces. And I know that you can't feed somebody with anger, or it's like giving them poison. And I went up to each person who I had built up resentment to, and justifiable, righteous resentment. I'm very creative in justifying my actions, so I had a good reason to be angry at that person. And I stood there, and he didn't say, work it out, which is what we in the West psychologically like to, let's work out our anger so everybody saves face. He said, give it up. And I looked at the person, and I had to just let it go. And it was so painful. And when I had let it go and I could look at that person with love again, I stuck the apple in their mouth. And it took me over an hour and a half to do that for these people before I could finally really let go enough to do it. Because I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford not to forgive. Okay? Once you're in the one, there's nothing builds up, so there's no forgiveness. No forgiveness is required because you don't forgive a tree and you don't forgive a river. You know, it's like lightning strikes your house and you say, I forgive you. I mean, who are you forgiving? It's interesting. You know that story about the Chinese story about the boats in the fog? And there's the boatman, and he hits another boat, and he starts swearing at the other, why didn't you look where you're going? And then the fog lifts for a moment, and he sees there's nobody in the other boat. And he feels like a fool, Well, it's roughly the same thing. I mean, you hold a grudge against your father as if he's in there. He isn't in there. Psychologically, you think he is because you think you're in you. But once you begin to see, he's just a set of phenomena happening. You're busy saying, I forgive you, to a clock. You know, it's really nothing different than that. I don't mean to demean personality. It's quite interesting. But it is a lawful set of events. It's not freedom. About the lighthouse? Yeah, sure. The joke about the lighthouse, yes. Yes. Question?
How do we keep ourselves open to ourselves, giving to ourselves, and still learn how to receive as well as to give? For myself, there is some kind of fear associated with receiving that may be loss of control. I'm not sure.
This predicament, which is primarily a psychological issue, is rooted in the way in which we use our acts to prove ourselves or to counteract a root component of our ego that is basically negative. That is basically what the Christians call original sin, but in psychodynamics, Freud certainly talks about it's the way in which we've dealt with id impulses, it's the way in which we've ended up with feelings of either unworthiness or inadequacy that are seed components in personality structure. They're in there. They're like the pea under the 10 mattresses for the princes. And they start to color things along the way so that there is a way in which most people's acts, most of the time, are done with some element of testing their adequacy or proving their adequacy. Whether it's making love or achievement or so on, there is a quality. Unless a person is a self-actualized being in Maslowian terms, there is the tendency to use your universe constantly to prove and test that. So that when you do good for somebody else or you give to somebody else, you are reinforcing the fact that you're a good person, which is counteracting the basic feeling you're not. Because you wouldn't have to collect new material if you started from zero, but you're starting from a negative base. Do you hear that issue? And to receive help is in a way reinforcing the model that you aren't enough.
Now, when you have started the spiritual part of awakening to the soul's identity, there is a recognition that all dynamics between human beings